Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Culture Club.
Money FM 89.3. It is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now for Culture Club. And today we're talking about the term Pokeball. It's been doing the rounds on social media for a couple of years now, and chances are you've probably already tried this dish at the peak of the Pokeball craze. It's actually a typical Hawaiian dish. It consists of raw fish, combining chunks of fresh seafood with a lot of toppings as well. It actually became quite popular in the 70s, if you think about it, and it's become increasingly popular over the years for a lot of reasons. First, it offers a healthy, customizable meal option for any taste preference. Second, it provides convenience for a quick meal that can be taken on the go, or perhaps you enjoy it more than just a substantial dish, right? And now, since opening their doors back in 2016, Poke Theory's brother-sister duo have served up countless bowls of rice, fresh veggies, and raw fish. 8 years later, Poke Theory is looking to innovate and enhance their menu with a fresh overhaul in April. We're going to find out more. In the studio with me is Joey Lee, who's the co-founder and managing director of Poke Theory. Joey, welcome. How are you, man?
Hi, Elliot. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
And I just want to say, I think I've contributed quite a bit to the business, my wife and I.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, it's really nice. And I wonder, I only knew about it because I ordered it, and for the first time, I think my wife introduced it to me. And ever since then, I've been fascinated. Wait, so how did you come up with this inspiration?
Okay, the genesis of it was I literally just stumbled upon it when I was in Los Angeles.
So
I was just like super hole-in-the-wall kind of spot.
Okay.
I went there, and I had no idea what it was because I saw signage. And to me back then, I had no concept of what this dish was.
Okay.
I was wondering, why is this place called Pok Pok?
Right? Oh,
and
right.
I was just like, what is this? But I saw a queue of people. So I went there.
Okay.
I just told the lady that, okay, I'll just have whatever that everyone's having.
Oh.
And I received what essentially was just a bit of rice and some chunks of tuna that looked seasoned. I tried it. Then I realized that, like, whoa, this tastes like sushi with, when I dip the right amount of soy sauce
without
on it.
A seaweed around it.
Yeah,
right?
All the frills and everything. Yeah. And it was, you know, eaten out of a bowl. So I felt that, you know, this is an easy way to kind of bring this food to the table, but without all the fanciness. You don't need a sushi chef, anything like too difficult with it. And this was really just a hole in a wall place, no seats. And yeah, it just kind of sparked something. I came back. Back then, I had to serve my NS. I was serving my NS and just thinking about all of this, and then just kind of took a leap of faith. And yeah, I did some R&D. My sister tried it. She was like, she wants in. And then we just thought, this is brilliant. This is something that we could do together. We felt that there was a gap in the market.
Okay.
And back then, the momentum for healthy food was really building up.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we've been quite blessed that we've rode that momentum.
I would say it's also in being of the right age group to be exposed to this, because the difference between your age and mine, that range, right, those couple of years is when you have this generation of people that really want to eat healthier. But unfortunately, because of the pressures of society, we still need to work, eat at our desk. So how do we maximize all of that? Or at least that's the impression I get from the food at Poke Theory. There are quite a number of similar businesses that have come out over the years. As a consumer, I feel I can answer this question, but I want to hear from you. What sets you apart from other businesses?
I think our product is, it is true. There are now, especially, many options of what, if as a consumer, you're looking for a healthy meal, right? If we're talking about the 80s and the 90s, I think for most people, healthy eating was kind of just something that you dread to do.
Yeah.
Right? You're just like, I have to
tasteless,
do it.
Tasteless, right?
It is obligatory. I'm going to get hungry in 2 hours' time.
Yep.
It's a bit of leaves. Yep. That's the concept of it then. I think when it hit about the 2010s, things started changing because people recognized a need for different options. Grain bowls was something that really popped up. And this was something that we took and we fused it with the idea of poke. Because poke originally was literally just plain rice and marinated tuna on top. It didn't have all the toppings that we have now. No veggies. Who the hell thought about like fruits being eaten together with like sashimi? We don't know.
Yeah. But it tastes great though.
No.
With the almonds and all that.
People try it, they would just think that it's strange. But I think now you see so many different types. But what sets us apart, I feel, is that craving that you have for cooked meat.
Okay.
If you're looking for, you know, like cooked chicken, cooked beef. I think it's a very different craving for sashimi.
Yes.
Right? Agree. If you're craving for sashimi, it is light years away from having a steak.
Yes.
And when you're eating healthy food, sometimes you just want different options, as you do with when you're looking for a meal in, whether healthy or not healthy, convenient or fine dining.
Yeah.
So I think what we have is an alternative, a different option. We try to make sure that we have a wide range so that people don't feel that, oh, when they come and eat poke, it's always going to be that same combination.
Mm.
Whereas if you were to eat at any other grain bowl concept, you get to choose on many different toppings.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that sometimes you just want a different option while still staying within the domain of healthy eating.
There's a bit of power in my hands as well because I could customize the bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
People like that.
Yeah.
Running this business with your sister, I don't think I could ever run a business with my sister, and I'm the oldest sibling. How does it work in your case?
Many people have asked us this. Especially, I think when we had started in the F&B scene in particular, there were no first gen sibling businesses. Sure, there were siblings who were taking over as second gen or third gen. We were the only ones then. And of course, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There were turbulence
for sure,
at the start. Yeah. And because I'm the younger one.
Yeah.
And I was fresh out of the army, right?
Okay.
My sister had already worked. So we made sure to have clear demarcations about what we do. It was as straightforward as she's someone who, to put it in a certain way, she can't count. So numbers are just not her forte.
Right.
But she's brilliant when it comes to branding, when it comes to marketing
right.
The advertising side of things.
Yeah.
So it was as simple as, look, if there's any problems that come up with what I do, you could have done it better. And likewise, if there's any problems that come up with your side of the things, I couldn't have done it better.
Oh,
so
I like that.
We are going to go through these problems of being first-time entrepreneurs together, and there are bound to be problems. There are bound to be hiccups, but we know that neither of us could have done it better. So as a team, we're just going to overcome this together. And at the start, you know, we learn how to communicate with each other. My sister is actually now based in Melbourne,
right?
So that was also something that, you know, we kind of had to grapple with,
but.
Yeah, I think now, especially when we can look back on what it was like, especially in the first year and a half, I think this has definitely brought us so close. We were already very close as siblings.
Right.
That's probably what made it kind of possible to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I think that's just an unbreakable bond between us.
Any incident where parents had to get involved and say, y'all two stop fighting?
Oh, no. Like, this decision for us to do it was very clear cut that, I mean, look, just the whole thought of, I don't think any Singaporean parent wants to hear that their children, for me in particular, I wasn't going to go to university.
Okay.
For my sister, she was going to quit her career.
Ooh,
and then the both of us are just
Asian problems
dive.
About to start.
Yeah, and not just do a startup, right?
Yeah.
But of all the possible startups, go into F&B.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, in some American idea as well.
Yeah, untested product whatsoever. So it was something that, there was very, very strong conviction from the both of us. And from then, we just kind of, we had this idea that we were very sure was going to come to fruition. And fortunately, when we started it, it just, we were fortunate that it took off. So after that, nothing much that mom can say after that. And from there, we just did it our own way. We ran it the way that we
always going to be risks, but wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's just brilliant. I'm curious about what you see in terms of the demands of running a homegrown F&B brand in the current landscape in 2024.
Homegrown as in the difference between doing a brand that started from scratch in Singapore versus, let's say, like bringing in another brand?
I think more on the kind of demands in today's day and age where you see, look, anyone wants to get into F&B. A lot of people don't realize that the first 3 years or maybe beyond that, it's going to be horrible, for lack of better choice of words.
Yep.
How do you feel about the current landscape now?
Okay, this is a tough question.
Okay.
We have had Enterprise Singapore literally bring in founders like myself to do talks to young, let's say, they're budding and they want to be
aspiring entrepreneurs.
And literally the topic that we are supposed to say is we are supposed to kind of dissuade them from the rainbows and butterflies that they think that every startup is going to be.
I agree.
Because the media is always going to show the success stories.
Of course.
And they don't, not everybody comes to that realization that with every successful story, there's a mountain of skeletons that they're standing on. Right. So I think in the current day and age, it is, you know, I think that really requires a sort of hunger. I think for myself, there was kind of like something to prove. And then the moment we started, that's when you realize you're in too deep. Against the wall.
You kind of almost have to be having the right kind of delusion to believe in yourself to succeed. And I don't mean this negatively.
No, for sure. It's the best example is how a kid dares to get on a bike and ride. You know, when you don't know what you don't know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah. But honestly, people have asked me this before. If I knew what I knew now and I could go back and kind of like advise myself when I was 20 years old, would I do it? I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I count my lucky stars that it's turned out the way that it is.
Yeah.
But I get why exactly, you know, the older generation try to dissuade us. You know, they're telling us the whole Singaporean route, right? Just go and do
stable job, 20 years.
Go for the white collar, you know, get your degree. And like there's many different ways that this could have turned out wrong. Just, you know, just fortunate that we managed to navigate our way out of it.
What do you think was a key factor to stay on course? I mean, other than belief, would you count it to support or the fact that this is your own flesh and blood, you're your sister, so you're in it together?
Yeah. Failure was not an option.
It
really was.
Why was it not an option?
No, because, I mean, we had, so me and my sister, just a quick backstory. Since we were studying, we were freelancing, we had been part-time journalists, we had started like our own homegrown cookie business.
You've made a lot of choices, mate.
Every single dollar that we had managed to pull together still was not enough to even open that very first outlet.
Wow.
Right.
And this is the one in Telok Ayer,
this is the one in Telok Ayer, yeah. So we had to take a small seed loan from my mom. That was maybe about 60K, 70K.
Okay.
Everything else, my sister's 3 years of working, we wiped out our entire bank savings. Right. Okay. And for me, there was that extra little bit of the fact that I had turned down an opportunity to study overseas.
Mm.
And it was so much was at stake.
Mm-hmm.
When we started, the cash flow was close to zero. Mm. We had expended everything. We just underestimated the cost of everything, such that when we started, we didn't even have enough money to hire the full-timers that we needed. It was just me, my sister, and this army of just crazy part-timers who followed us on social media, saw that we had this
idea.
This like goal to do it, right? And they wanted to be on board. And we were just, I don't know how much of it to attribute to fortune, how much of it to attribute to my sister's social media strategy, but it went viral online from the very first day we sold out. So if we did not sell out in that first week, we wouldn't have that cash flow to hire the first full-timer and the second full-timer and to be able to step out from the operations to look at it from a business perspective. So it was such a fine line.
Yeah.
And it was at that point when there were the first month, I would say, we had survived on 2 to 3 hours of sleep.
Mm.
No exaggeration. Really 2 to 3 hours of sleep. Contemplated sleeping in the shop.
Yeah.
No showers, that kind of thing. But
oh dear.
It was just, there was one particular morning where I remember my alarm went off and I wanted so badly to just ignore it and just going to my sister's room, seeing that she had actually like pressed the off button on it. I literally dragged her out of bed and told her, we are doing this. And we went down and we just, you know, just had to make it work. Yeah, there was too much on the line. And I was just thinking about how long I would take to pay back that loan. Do I still continue to study after that? And I think it was really, there's no other option. And
This part that you brought up, right? There's no room for failure. And I see that similarity in a lot of successful people. A good friend of mine, Rachel from Love Bonito, similar story also. There's this loan involved, cannot afford to fail, you just go all in, right? And maybe that's what we need as well to find that height to succeed. Just very quickly, some business-related questions. Differences between running operations here and the rest of Southeast Asia? I understand you're also in Indonesia and Vietnam as well, right?
Yeah.
Any noticeable differences?
Oh, Many. But for starters, I think when it comes to overseas, how we operate is on a franchise model.
Okay.
So we always work with a franchisee that is familiar with this overseas territory. So we started off in Indonesia. I think Bali in particular is something that is still... The similarities between Bali and Singapore, it's not that bad.
In terms of consumption culture as well, right?
The kind of price strategy that we do, customers that we will have, you know, there are plenty of expats there, plenty of expat customers that we have here as well.
Okay.
We know how they think. When it comes to Vietnam, it's a little bit different.
Okay.
We need to start figuring out, but we are still fortunate in the sense that they are used to that taste.
Right.
You know, raw vegetables are so in their diet already.
Yes.
It's more about the price strategy, which district we're going to open in. So all of these, we have these franchisees that we work with, and before we take that plunge together with them, we make sure that we can work together and make sure that they understand our product. We sometimes have inquirers that come who are like, oh, we don't actually eat raw fish, but we believe that this business will work there. And we're just like, I'm sorry, but we cannot be partners if you don't even eat the fish. So how can... This isn't Singapore where I can be at the shop in less than half an hour. You know, I can't fly myself over all the time. You need to have that quality control. So we have our structure set up. We just need a good partner that's able to be dedicated and follow that system. And honestly, the rest of it also boils down to the caliber of that franchisee.
Okay.
So our selection of a franchisee matters. Eventually down the line, will we consider doing more of a joint venture style? Perhaps. But I think for starters, we are still at the very early stages. We're dipping our toes into overseas expansion.
Okay.
Mainly because we feel that Singapore close, I would say very close to saturation point already for our concept. So the only way is to start looking at overseas territories.
Is that what triggered a new menu in Singapore?
Yes and no. We have observed certain trends from overseas, but I think there's an underlying trend that is kind of taking place globally.
Okay.
Singapore is a big part of it as well. I think, like, I was having a dinner with some friends recently, and they were saying that, I can't remember what the exact term was. They said that we're in the generation of, like, fitness, or in the generation of, like, just being active.
Yeah.
In the past, like my parents' generation, the idea of after work is, you know, that it's always going to be, or let's go get drinks.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the drinks still exist, but there's this growing trend, and I know people who, it's a social thing to go and do exercise together. You know, they're going for spin class
different
together,
world,
they're going for bar together, they're going for all kinds of HIIT classes together, and this is something that, like, I cannot imagine my parents' generation doing that, because to them it's after work, they're exhausted, and that's it. So there's an underlying trend there where, along with that momentum that we're getting from the government, where they're trying to, you know, we're knowing more about what we put into our bodies.
Okay.
They are pushing us in the direction of healthy eating. My wife had said that, you know, hangovers have been replaced by half marathons.
Yeah.
These are all just things where we feel that we need to start paying more attention.
Okay.
We've always been in that healthy eating category, but what we want to do is we want to be able to not just, we've always wanted to make our healthy food taste better, but at the same time, last time, I think we kind of ignored some of the people who would be counting their macros. So I didn't used to be that guy. After COVID, things changed, as I'm sure it has for a lot of people. And last time, I never understood. These emails would come in and they'll be saying, where is the, I'm vegan, there's no protein option. We used to serve avocado poke.
Oh, wow. So it's quite a bit of demand from consumers.
So it's very
consumer-driven as well.
A lot of requests had come in, but I had always championed taste over everything.
Yep.
And I ignored all of these. And people are saying, where's the tofu? You know, where's the tempeh? Why do I not have an option if I'm vegan?
Fantastic.
And over time, then I realized that, wow, now I understand.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is after you go for a workout, you don't get what you need.
Yeah.
Right. So this new rollout that we're doing for our menu, we want to include a wider range of our customers because they are vegetarians, they are vegans, there are some people who cannot eat raw food, you know, pregnant women, young kids, that even parents, they want to get their kids into that healthy eating habit. And we want to be more inclusive of this. I think it's something that is kind of, it's quite overdue from our side. But above all, I do still believe that taste still needs to be paramount. So we're trying to strike that balance.
Yeah. Fantastic. Been speaking with Joey Lee, who's the co-founder and managing director of Poke Theory. By the way, what's the weirdest way you've heard someone say poke before?
Literally today. I mean, there's no weird way, but it's always poke. You know, it's always just like poke theory, and I've been...
It doesn't make sense.
No, I've figured out two ways as the best way to tell people. I tell them it's either okay with a P in front or K-po flipped around.
Thanks a lot, mate.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.